morning, everyone. The Mary Griffin Show is underway, and it is brought to you each and every weekday morning by Hilbing Auto Body. Remember, if it happens to you, take it to Hilbing. I sincerely hope the loyal listener, Skip Valcamp, is listening today, because he says he listens every morning to the Mary Griffin Show, but we'll find out today, because his little boy is all grown up and is our new fire chief, Bernie Valcamp.
Good
Congratulations
morning.
And welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So glad to have you here as we continue our monthly segment with firefighters. I was in the presence of many firefighters yesterday. Huber Corporation had a wonderful thank you luncheon for first responders. Of course, not everybody can go because some people are working, you know, but that's the trouble when you try to salute your first responders. They've got to work.
They can't
go to be saluted, but it was a really nice event down at Huber, and they had a nice luncheon for the sheriff's office and the police officers and all the firefighters from around all of Adams County, and so everything was great. And your firefighters were there, some of them, and most of them, though, were busy, I think, at Quincy University yesterday doing training with QU, so ongoing training is a huge part of what the Quincy Fire Department does, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. They have training days throughout the month, and we cover many different aspects of firefighting, and it just gets an ongoing process. So.
And I understand that, like, a lot of different fire departments kind of take a specialty role. Like, I know they just have a new grain rescue chute up in Mendon. So those firefighters are getting trained on how to do that. And Tri-Township was out in force yesterday at Huber because they have a mine rescue unit. Not that Quincy wouldn't be maybe involved if there was a disaster, but they take the lead on that. They also take the lead, I think, on some water rescue, and then Quincy takes the lead on, like, airport rescue and high building extraction. So you kind of work together, don't you? Explain how that works with this mutual aid.
Oh, yeah. No, we have a mutual aid agreement with especially with Tri-Township on water rescues, on those aspects, because we have a Quincy Fire Department boat, and they also have a boat, but we, since we're closer to the river, we can usually get there quicker, and they're coming in behind us. But that works out if you have an unknown location on the river, which is typically what can happen. We can put it at two different locations, and so we can cover different aspects of the river. So that works out well. So,
yeah.
And the guys do train together to try to get together at least once a month to do something.
Cooperation among these fire departments is really critical, because in and of yourselves, you could never really have enough manpower for a huge event. We hope something like 9/11 would never happen in Quincy. But something like that, I remember the JCPenney building fire at the corner of 6th and Main was probably one of the biggest conflagrations we had, the Newcomb Hotel fire. You're going to have more manpower than any city could ever have. You're going to have to rely on your friends and neighbors.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, yeah. Most recently, you know, we had the like you said, the Newcomb fire. If we have a large fire event like that, a fifth alarm fire, we'll rely on Tri-Township to help cover in the town to handle some of our EMS calls, some of the other calls that happen throughout the city. And recently, too, or going back a ways, but they had the Dieter's Dairy fire where they had all their manpower. And so we were helping. We were sending men out there to assist them with that. So there's been a mutual agreement there numerous times to help each other out. And we also get calls. We have some of the equipment that we have here. We just had that hog confinement fire over in West Quincy. We sent our aerial truck over there to assist the Palmyra Fire Department with that because they just didn't have that type of equipment. So,
yeah, that's great. And I think a lot of times people, when they truly understand how important it is, yes, our tax dollars support, you know, our local fire department, but we couldn't possibly, like a town like Palmyra, they're not going to invest in an aerial truck. They're not going to use it that often.
Yes.
But
mm-hmm.
the good news is they have a good friend in Quincy. And the same way, they've got expertise maybe in things that you don't have. And so they may be able to provide you with more. I know for one thing, they got a lot of tankers because you guys are lucky. You can pretty much pull up into a hydrant situation.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these rural firefighters, they have to carry the water to that and then put down a hose in a pond. And if there's no pond, they've got to relay back and forth. It's really a mess sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. They've got more tankers, obviously, than we have because we don't have any because we rely on hydrants. Whereas, so that's another example. When we run to the Quincy Airport, we have a Tri-Township and then Camp Point Central Adams Fire Department will bring their tanker trucks to the airport to assist us. So if there's something out on the grounds, we don't have to shuttle back and forth to a hydrant. So
okay.
It works out well.
Well, we've talked a lot about training, and we've covered almost all aspects of training in the past months here on the Mary Griffith Show. So while we've got the chief here today, because you never know when the chief's going to be available on the second Friday, Bernie Valcamp, let's talk a little bit about you. You've been elevated to the position of chief. There was some internal candidates for the job. They had some external candidates for the job, and you were chosen. What do you think is your number one challenge, shall we say, as you take over the Quincy Fire Department?
Well, so far, the number one challenge has just been trying to learn the role of the chief. I mean, I had a pretty good idea. I've been on the department for 24 years, and I have a pretty good idea of how the department's been ran from moving up through the ranks. But now that I'm the chief, I'm trying to figure out exactly how the budgeting and all those aspects work. Like I said, I have a pretty good idea, and I'm learning it quickly. But that's been the biggest challenge, is trying to figure out, even like these things, all the pub ed events, or all the extraneous stuff that the chief does on the side. So
extraneous. Wait a minute.
This is a core value
right here. But you're right. It's kind of funny. Like, kids always think, "Well, my parents, why do they do that?" And then you become an adult yourself, and you're like, hey, maybe my dad wasn't so dumb after all. He might have known a thing or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, now that you're sitting behind the seat, you probably think, why did Henning do that sometimes? Or why did Dolman do that sometimes? And now you know there's a little bit of politics involved in being the chief.
Oh, there can be. Yeah, there can be. But that's all good. You know, it's very easy to talk to people. And as long as you're, you know, just being sincere and honest, things work out. So.
Well, you've got 24 years experience under you, and you are also, I think, pretty well supported by your rank and file. That helps a lot, too. Let's talk a little bit about keeping good firefighters and recruiting good firefighters. You know, do you have a shortage right now? And is that shortage caused by lack of money? Or is that shortage caused by lack of qualified personnel to get into the job and be properly trained?
Right now it's a little bit of both. Of course, obviously, we're just coming off the pandemic, the COVID years and stuff, and we're still battling that aspect of it. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there. So there's been a few things that have been cut back on, and manpower was one of them. And we've done a good job so far this year. We have been allowed to hire three people, so we'll be back up here shortly. We got the third one starting September 20th. We'll be back up to our 58 firefighters. We typically run 60, so we're still going to be too short for this budget year. But hopefully, as we see the numbers come in over the next couple of years, we'll be able to get that number back up. So that is a challenge. And then, and like I said, even alongside that, though, too, when we used to test, we would normally have anywhere from 100 to 200 people show up for an application. I think this last one we only had 23. So the number of candidates testing for the job has obviously gone down over the years, too. So.
And, you know, again, of those 23, we're not talking about any individual personally, but if you need to fill four positions, you don't just say, well, these guys, that's all we've got. I mean, there's a high criteria.
Yes, there is.
If only two are qualified, even if you need four, just going to hire the two that are qualified. I mean, you're not going to say, oh, well, it's a space to fill. It's not quite like flipping a hamburger. I mean,
they go through quite a vetting process. And so a number of them will be dropped out through the vetting process. And so you end up with a short list of candidates you have at the end. And that's not just here in Quincy. That's happening at departments statewide. So.
Yeah, that's why I continue, because I know Chief Henning would talk about that, how, you know, we'd love to be up to full strength, but by the time you get somebody interested and then you get them trained, because, you know, when you start your new job somewhere, sometimes you get a lot of on-the-job training, but in firefighting, police work, other professions like that, you have to go away to an academy or get some advanced training. You don't just walk onto the Quincy Fire Department and say, oh, when the alarm goes off, I'll just follow you around and learn on the job. That's not quite how it works, does it?
Oh, no. We put the guys through a pretty rigorous training process, especially through their first year. We do get some people that come to us that have already been to the academy, so then we just put them through an in-house training for typically 2 weeks to a month, depending on how they handle it. But if they come to us new, if they've made it through the vetting process, and they come into us and start on the Quincy Fire Department, the first things we want to do is get them over to the Fire Academy, because that's a seven-week process over there where they can learn. It's basically 7 weeks, nothing but hands-on performance under more extreme conditions.
And that's at Champaign-Urbana?
Yes.
Okay. So, again, right away they hire on. They have to go away for 7 weeks to really get that training, classroom and on-the-job experience. And then when they come back, the training never ends, because your firefighters are constantly, just like the other day, they were kind of rehearsing, what would we do if there was a fire at Quincy University dormitory? Mm-hmm. What would we do if we had to evacuate the campus?
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, just from being down at lunch at Huber Company and talking to the gentleman that work at Huber in those mines, you know, it's like they have that peace of mind knowing that if something goes wrong, there's qualified rescue, ambulance personnel, firefighters personnel that are going to come to their aid. And that's a peace of mind. You have to kind of do peace of mind, don't you? I mean, you all want to feel comfortable.
Yes. Yeah. The more training you do, the more confident the manpower is. So, and it's a very important factor of our job, because when you show up at the scene, you have to formulate a game plan very quickly, and that confidence comes with, be able to do that comes with the confidence in your training. So once you do all that stuff hands-on and go through it, you have that base of knowledge that you can use when you show up on that scene.
When you're a fire chief, you have to really have two very different brains in the sense that work, because in one hand, you're working on the budget and you're maybe making out a training schedule, and so you're talking about what my department's going to do the next month, the next 6 months, the next 12 months, the next 5 years. And then instantaneously, when that bell sounds, you have to switch Bernie Valcamp to the long-range planning to, in the next 30 seconds, what am I going to do to save lives and to make sure I have enough manpower to do this? I mean, that's probably hard for a lot of people who aren't in your business to understand. That constant readiness, is that take an emotional toll on people?
Oh, it can. It can. Definitely. I mean, most of that fire calls is handled by our assistant chiefs, the ones that are working the 24, 48-hour shift still. And they do, as the fire chief, I go there to support them at those fire scenes. They know what they're doing. They're trained very well to handle that. So as I'm doing the budgeting and my planning stuff, I'm always keeping in the back of mind what they're going to need when they handle those scenes. So when I show up there, my job is more, if it's a big enough scene, I can help in and help take over some support in the lead roles. But I'm there to be more of a support and make sure they've got the tools and the resources they need to get the job done. So.
And I think what you just said would surprise a lot of listeners, because if they go by any fire scene, if they see the fire chief there, you're really not the one in control and command of the situation. You're there backing up those assistants and deputies that are in control and command of that situation, because that's what they are thinking about day in and day out.
Yes, I would. Yeah, 99% of the time, they're going to be the ones running the operations on the scene, because they know what they have, and or they know what manpower they have for that day. They know who's there. So I'm going to be the guy that's going to show up to help get them the resources, additional resources they're going to need. So,
an analogy. When I was the president of the Quincy Community Theater, I'd been an onstage actress, and then I was the president of the board. Suddenly, everything had a dollar figure associated with
yeah,
it. Like,
yeah.
Somebody broke a microphone. I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you know how much that costs?
Yeah.
I can see Bernie in a fire scene. Excuse me, that hose is very expensive.
Yeah, let's try not to break anything today.
Yeah. Let's try not to break anything while we're on the scene.
Yeah.
Put out the fire, but please, don't make the axe not be sharp, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you have to separate your budget mind from your firefighting mind, absolutely.
Yeah, that's why we try to firefighter-proof everything so it can't get broken, which is very hard to do some days.
So your biggest challenge really and probably would be, if I ask you every chief from back in the day, the biggest challenge is money, getting enough money to adequately equip and man a fire department so you're ready, you know, for any cause. What did you think about, there's a little bit of controversy, they spent $10,000 trying to find a replacement for Chief Henning. He was right there under their nose all along. I personally, I'll be honest, this is my show, I'll give my opinion, I don't think it's a bad idea to look outside sometimes for people. No offense to you, but...
Oh, no, that's fine.
You know, I mean, you never know what's out there if you don't look.
Mm-hmm.
But now some people have said, good Lord, we spent 10 grand and Bernie was sitting there the whole time. And if it hadn't been him, it could have been somebody else who applied from interior wise. Fire and police are a lot different. What do you think about the police and fire commission always being that separate, you know, taking away some of the politics? Because, man, if you really, really irritate Mike Trope and he was not a man of good ethical conduct, he could really... drive the nail into the fire department if he didn't like it.
Yeah, and that would be true of any person going into the future. I mean, there's no problems. You know, I've got a very good working relationship right now with the mayor and the deputy mayor, or Mr. Mays, and the alderman. And they're all very easy to talk to, so we got a good working relationship. But, yeah, I mean, when they're talking about the money-wise there, I just look at it as the fact that we've had a police chief now for close to, I think, 26 years, and a fire chief, Joe, was there for 12. So in the search for looking for chiefs, we spent $12,000 in the last 20 years. So overall, the commissioners have really do a good job of looking into the candidates, do a good thorough vetting process. They know what they're doing. They're involved in the police and fire departments. They know what they're looking for. So I think it's a good process that we have going.
So you wouldn't be in favor. You like this police and fire commission that's kind of separate and kind of has a little buffer there between. Not at the moment, and we're not implying that there would be any at the moment, but any vindictive thing that could happen, because you are, you and the police and fire is the most expensive thing.
Oh, yeah.
And they can
yeah.
really turn the screws on you if somebody kind of got to be in their bonnet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, most definitely. No, I think the police fire commissioners are good to have in there. There's a little bit of a buffer zone there. So that is because the police and fire chief are always going to be looking out for the good of the community, good of the department. And like I said, the good of the community comes first and the department, then you come to the, you know, then you got to start worrying about the budget. So, and that all plays in, that all plays together. So, but being able to have the police fire commission in there as somebody to have your back, to also be a person that people that you can talk to because they're knowledgeable on the police and fire service, is a good thing to have. So,
what about you know, because you've been on the job for 24 years, you've been in a management capacity for a while, but you were a firefighter. You know what it's like to be a day to day firefighter. So now the union negotiations come around and they're like, well, chief, you know, we really need this much money, and chief says, well, you know, gee, I think that's great. I'll go ask the city council, and they're like, no way.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you have to come back and tell your friends.
Yeah.
Not quite so fast.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is a tough thing, isn't it? Because, again, you know, everybody's going to fight for their share of the pie, and you're going to fight for their share of the pie, but you're in a weird situation as a manager because you really – answer to the management team of the city of Quincy and the budget.
Yes,
aspect,
yes, oh, most
not
definitely.
To the people mm-hmm. you supervise.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's a compromise there. I mean, there's always a way to try to figure it out. But sometimes it's, the easy answer is not always going to be the right answer. Sometimes the hard answer is going to be the right answer. So it just has to be made. And as long as you can justify the reason why you're doing it, there's nothing wrong with coming up with making the hard decision because there has to be a reason behind it. And if you're, as long as you're right and just in what you're deciding, that's the one you go with. So there's always going to be a budget issue there that's going to come with the manpower trying to figure out what the right, like I said, where the monies are going to go. And that's just a decision you have to make. And as long as you're making what you feel is the right decision, then nobody can really second guess that or question you on it. So, I mean, even when you go to talk to your friends about it, it's like, look, this is what we have. This is what we're going to do. So,
right.
I mean, it like I said, it works itself out. So hopefully, I know I'm not always going to make everybody happy. That's
oh,
not, I'm sure
on,
of that.
Come on, Bernie. You're going to make everybody happy. I mean, I
that's
know.
That's impossible.
When I call at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning and get everybody out of bed because I want to, you know, make sure that I've got the right address on a fire, they just love that, waking
yeah,
up
yeah.
and hearing my bright, shiny voice. Well, we talked about challenges, and, of course, money will always be one. I'm going to let you go on this because, of course, you have no control over it, so I love to ask these questions. The firefighter pension and police officer pension, but this is just eating us alive. And why can't the state, why do you think there isn't the political will to really revamp that? Because you're going to be hiring brand new firefighters. You say you've got a new one starting on September 20th. Realistically speaking, you're going to promise that young man or woman that if they give a life of service to the city of Quincy, they will retire and they will have this pension guaranteed. And is it realistic to think that really 30 or 40 years from now, and it's not, I mean, you know, that
yeah,
really is going to happen?
Wouldn't
it be better just to change it now, not for the people who are already in, maybe,
mm-hmm.
but something's got to give because it's unsustainable, isn't it?
It's a tough challenge. There's no doubt about it. I mean, currently right now, I mean, our pension fund is managed here locally, but they're getting ready to, they have made some changes to how they handle that. So, all downstate pensions soon are going to be lumped into one bigger pot so that it grows quicker as far as interest rates and stuff go. So they just started that process and that's going to should be kicking in later this year.
Do you feel good about that?
I think it's a good idea to put the money so it grows faster into a bigger pot, but now we lose control of how it's locally managed, I guess. So we'll see how that goes.
As long as it's there, right?
Yes, as long as it's there. So I think we got to give that process a little bit of chance to work here to see how that's going to play out over the next 5 to 10 years. But there's definitely issues that's going to have to be addressed there with the pension fund.
Okay, so. If they start paying out alphabetically, Quincy loses. You understand that?
Well, yeah, and so would I. Cause I'm at the very end of the alphabet also. So
Bernie, I keep calling him Bernie. I should say Chief Valcamp. Just delightful. You know, to have you on board as the fire chief, looking forward to you continuing to support having your firefighters come on monthly and talk about things. And I think people, they don't know what you do. I mean, those old stereotypes that sit around and play cards and eat chili all day. Well, they don't. They're training all the time for things that may or may not ever happen. But, you know, we hope they never happen, but we want them to be ready when they do. And you don't want to have a hole in the hose. Because somebody will, you know, oh, well, I'll get around to repairing that. No.
Yeah, yeah.
The minute you get back to the station, we do that. We just say, I'm kind of tired. Can I lay down and take a nap? No. So, you know, people have to understand that the professional firefighting force is a lot different than it was 100
years
ago.
So. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. You don't get to, yeah, when it's your time, when you're on duty, there's no time to rest if it's not affordable to you. So you just take care of what needs to be done so it's always ready to go for the next person or for yourself the next time the next call comes in. So.
Okay. Well, Skip, you did something right. I bet he's so proud of you. I bet he's just about to bust. Bernie Valcamp, the new chief of fire operations in the city of Quincy. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a familiar voice will be at that radio microphone. Jeff Dorsey is here to talk about the Alzheimer's Association. We'll get to Jeff in just a moment. Taking us into the next segment of the Mary Griffith Show, do not adjust your time machine. You are not going back into time. But you are going to hear a voice that is very familiar to WTAD listeners, although it has not been heard here for quite some time. My guest today is Jeff Dorsey, one of my many former radio husbands. There are just a slew of them strung across the tri-state that I have chewed up and spit out. And here's the biggest chunk I ever chewed up and spat out, and that's Jeff Dorsey. Welcome back, big dog.
Oh, it's so nice to be here. You know that?
It is nice to be sitting across from you, and for once, I'm in control of the microphone.
That is a scary proposition.
He cannot mute me. Well, you are enjoying retirement, but you're still very active in our community, and the Alzheimer's Association is one of the causes that you care deeply about. And so let's talk about a big event that's coming up, because we do want to promote this. And Alzheimer's is the kind of thing any of us can get it. We still haven't quite figured out why some people get it, why they get it early, why maybe your brother has it, but you don't get it. We don't know.
Yeah, it's different for everyone, and thank you for having me on today. I appreciate this. I'm really here for Sherry Robertson, who is the manager of the local office here, but she's been tasked with setting up multiple walks. The Quincy Walk is coming up. The Jacksonville Walk, actually, for those of you in that area, is coming up on Sunday at the Community Park at 1:15. And then the Macomb Walk is going to be on the 18th of this month at Chandler Park at 9:45. And then the Quincy Walk is coming up on the 25th, and that is a Saturday morning. That's going to be at Mormon Park, and it'll start around 9:15 with the registration at 8:30. So we get all that out. But
yeah, but that's in the tri-state area. Of course, look for the Alzheimer's Walk that is closest to you, and of course, you'll be walking in the Quincy Walk the last Saturday of the month at Mormon Park out on North 36th Street. And the idea is not to try to maybe walk as far or whatever. The idea is to get pledges and just go out and have a good time. I mean, in lieu of actually walking, you could just write a check.
Yeah, we had a virtual. Yeah, well, that we'll always take that. You know, last year was virtual, which was really weird. You know, but everybody did their job, and then we raised a lot of money with it as best as we could through a pandemic. And we're dealing with those issues now, obviously, too. But we're still going to have the walk this year. It's going to be, as we mentioned, at Mormon Park. But we're looking for teams that you can sign up people, and you can do all kinds of things to raise money. You know, people are selling popcorn or something on popcorn stands. The kids can help raise. The families can raise money. It doesn't have to be a lot. You know, if you came to us and said we raised $50 doing that, thank you. Bless you.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't like we're looking for thousands of dollars from people or anything like that. But if you want more information, the best way to go is to go to our app, the Walk to End Alzheimer's mobile app. And you can download the Alzheimer's app via the Apple app or Google Play Store. So that way it has all the information, and you can keep track of what's going on and when and all that kind of thing. So I'd certainly encourage people to do that. You know, Mary, you mentioned as you started, you don't know why it happens. Why some people get it, other people don't. In my life, my dad had it.
Really? And when did you start to know that there was something amiss, Jeff?
Well, when he kept forgetting things, for one thing. But that, I like most people, and in many cases, and a majority of cases, people forget things when they get older.
Yeah.
And that's normal. That's a normal thing. But there are comparisons as to what makes you think it's Alzheimer's or dementia.
Like what, I forgot what the washing machine is or what it's for.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Not, I misplaced my car keys.
Yeah, things like that.
You know, but like, what is this car key for? What is a car for? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a ton of things listed, and I think the app will show that too, probably, where if you're concerned about somebody, boy, he keeps forgetting this. That's a normal process of aging, okay? But there are other things where they forget beyond that you got to be concerned about. So, and if we have time, I might get to that in just a
little
bit.
Oh, yeah, we will. But I want to ask you because, you know, everything comes down to why do you are involved in a charity? It's all personal. So, I think I kind of escaped a bullet with my mother. My mother passed away from lung cancer. But right before she died, I kind of noticed that Miss Gina was, not quite as sharp as she used to be. So, if she had not succumbed so quickly to lung cancer, which was horrible, took her very young, if she was still alive today, I might be battling as a caregiver for someone with dementia. And, do you ever worry, if my dad had it, maybe I'll get it too?
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm getting that at age now where I forget things too, and names and, people.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, sometimes they're out of context. They're not wearing their uniform or something. And it's like, I know who that is, but who is he, And I think about that. Gosh, I hope I don't get this, And I am concerned about that. And I think anybody should be concerned about it. It's whether you follow up and find out whether you got a concern to worry about or not. There's always the question about what signs do you look for? If we have time here,
please do.
I don't know if you have to take a break or not, because I'm an old radio guy and I know about breaks.
Oh, I'm an old radio gal and I never take them, and I just let Steve figure out the log tomorrow.
And they keep you here. Good for you. But seriously, there are 10 warning signs and symptoms that people should kind of take a look at. Now, if you notice any of these, don't ignore them. Okay, that's for one thing. Schedule your appointment with your doctor. But memory loss that disrupts your daily life is one. Challenges in planning or solving problems, another. Difficulty completing familiar tasks. Confusion with time or place. Trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships. New problems with words and speaking or writing. Misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace steps. 8 would be decreased or poor judgment. Number 9 is withdrawal from work or social activities. Don't want to go anymore. Feel more comfortable being by myself. And the changes in mood and personality is number 10. So I didn't know that. I didn't remember that. I had to read it.
Well, just because you had to read that off of paper and couldn't memorize that doesn't show that you're in the early signs. It just shows that there's a normal process there. But you're right.
True.
Unfortunately, some of those symptoms are symptomatic of a lot of other things, too. And this is why I think one of the reasons why Alzheimer's disease is so misunderstood, it is scary to a lot of people, and they would rather not know than get diagnosed, and that's not a good thing. You should definitely talk to your physician. And the other thing you should do is support these research programs with the Alzheimer's Association and the Alzheimer's Walk so that you will be able to know that research is on its way. We do have to take one of those dreaded commercial breaks. And we'll be back to continue our conversation with Jeff Dorsey and the Alzheimer's Association. Their walk is the 25th of this month at Mormon Park in the morning. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Our remaining moments. Jeff Dorsey is here. He is a volunteer for the Alzheimer's Association. And, I don't think there's anybody whose life hasn't been touched by someone they know or love with Alzheimer's. And it can be a very cruel disease. Your body is still physically very able to do all the things you were able to do, but you simply do not have the mental capacity to carry on the normal task of life. And there's probably nothing more cruel than that, and people who are trapped in a body that doesn't work and their mind is completely lucid, but they're stuck bedridden, in some bed somewhere. So these are tragic things that happen. But this Alzheimer's Association is committed to research on the disease, drugs that can either help slow the process or, we haven't found a cure yet, but also good support for caregivers. I think there's not a single person listening out there, Jeff Dorsey, that doesn't have a friend or family member or somebody they know that has Alzheimer's. And getting that family care is important because caregiving for someone with Alzheimer's is a full-time job, and most people can't afford to quit their job and do that as a full-time job.
If you know a caregiver, offer your services to help them in any way possible, even relieve them for a couple hours so they can do what they need to do, okay? A lot of caregivers have family members who are watching for, looking out for their loved one. There are 11 million caregivers, and there's 6 million people dealing with the disease. But the caregivers are 11 million of them out there that on a daily basis, who are going to need help themselves. This is not an easy thing to do. You're dealing with somebody that you don't know what they're going to do next. You know, how much trouble can they get into? How much?
They wander off.
They wander. They leave the stove
on.
They do a variety of things. You know, leave the doors open. All kinds of things that, and you never know when. I mean, sometimes they're up all night, and you're trying to sleep, and it's a terrible thing for the caregivers. It affects them more.
And it's an expensive thing, too, because if you say, I want to keep my loved one at home, and then when you finally realize I can't do this anymore, and there are some beautiful facilities, but none of them are saying, well, come in, we're not going to charge you anything. So that's another problem, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the problem. And right, with COVID, it's not been easy either, because a lot of them have been shutting down, not allowing people to come in, you know, until they can figure out what they're going to do, how to handle this situation again. So that's been difficult, too. So there's a need, definitely a need there. You know, Mary, one of the questions that I get asked, the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's. Dementia is just a term for decline in memory. Alzheimer's is actually the disease. And I won't get into specifics. I'm not a doctor, and I couldn't tell you exactly. But there are different types of dementia that are out there. But it's all caused by Alzheimer's. So the symptoms, declining memory, not reasoning well with skills you used to be able to do, you can't any longer. So there are many, many symptoms of dementia. But basically, it's the same thing. You know, you're still dealing with persons who need assistance, and you can't just leave them alone for the most part.
Okay. Well, we've got less than a minute left, so plug your walk, and how can we get involved and give money and be a participant there on the 25th of this month?
Okay. The walk is going to be at Upper Mormon Park on Saturday, September 25th, and registration at 8:30. The Promise Garden ceremony starts at 9:15, which is very moving, and then the walk follows after that. So we hope everybody will be a part of that. That's on September 25th, that's Saturday, Upper Mormon Park in Quincy. If you want to donate and you can't make it there, you want more information about being a part of the walk, get your teams together, download the walk to End Alzheimer's using the Apple app or the Google Play Store, and locally call 228-1111.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary.